Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, a food, health, and environmental journalist, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Every week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between our personal health and well-being and our total health environment, everything going on in our relationships, in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our society, and on planet Earth. And every week on this show, we discuss different facets of that with authors, experts, activists, advocates, thought leaders, scientists, politicians even, all over the place. We have a lot of different people who have different areas they've studied in depth, championed, and dedicated their lives to, all to the betterment of health, balance, loving connection, and healthy ecologies here on planet Earth, both in our social systems and in our global ecology. So we talk about that every week on this program. I'm a longtime journalist. I cover these topics on the Huffington Post, Alternet, and other sites. And it's my pleasure to be with you every week, exploring different aspects of this. Very interested in today's program in particular, because our guest is discussing a topic that is, you know, very close to my heart, and I think also that of many, many other people. Her name is Linda Bender. She's a doctor of veterinary medicine, and she's authored a wonderful book called Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. You know, one thing that we know very much, both from the people we know in our communities and our friends and colleagues, no matter how close physically or how far flung, as well as through all of the exchanges on the internet and in the blogosphere, where we really kind of get to see what people are concerned about, is the tremendous importance to many people of animals and relationships with animal companions, friends, pets, protecting and preserving wildlife and wild animals, as well as our connections with our regular domestic friends. So we're going to be talking about that this week with Linda Bender, and she's a veterinarian as well as someone who really tunes in to animals as and encourages us to do that in very special ways for very special reasons, and that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. So welcome, Linda, to Connect the Dots.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me,
Allison. Yeah, it's great to have you here.
I'm excited. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you just
okay,
fine.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
You know, it's a funny thing. I'm just going to, I could ask a big general question, but I'm going to ask a sort of offbeat question to begin.
Yes.
And it's something that I've never been able to figure out, but I have, you know, quite a number of friends on Facebook, and many of them I've actually gotten to know in person, and it always astounds me. I know there are people who, you know, are fond of many different kinds of animals, cats, dogs, horses, turtles, elephants, but among my friends, there are so many who seem to have companion animals that share their lives who are tabbies. And I've had tabbies, too. I had a pair of tabbies, and we still have the brother who survived, you know, the passing of his sister. They're older animals. But I'm just astounded at how many gray tabbies there are out there amongst my friendship group. And, you know, I just can't begin talking about this matter more objectively before, you know, finding out if you have any insight into that. Are the animals organizing us into an affinity group, or is there, you know, something about the, you know, the people that will have a particular kind of animal and feel close to that kind of animal? I know very often people, if they like a breed of dog or whatever, they've been known to get that breed repeatedly, even naming the animal, the successor animal, the same name. You know, so I know this is a little bit jumping in on the deep end here, but, you know.
No, I love it. Well, okay. It's actually, there is not a simple answer to that question. I could go on for the whole hour about this, but let me just say, let me clear one thing up right away. I hear frequently, because I've been speaking to people for years, more years than I want to think about the relationship between animals and humans, and I am speaking of both wildlife and our companion animal friends. But sometimes people get an idea in their head that they have a totem animal, that there is one animal or type of animal that speaks to them in particular, and they tend to perhaps ignore others. Mm-hmm. What I believe is that all animals, all species, have messages, and they are all here to teach us certain things. There are different times in our lives that different animals come in. Mm-hmm. I have sort of a Pied Piper effect on people. When they start getting to know me really well, particularly people who help me do the work I do, they say, Linda, my God, all these animals, you know, blackbirds are coming to my door, blue jays are coming. I have a particular connection to blue jays, so they will turn up in my life at particular times. Mm-hmm. So I think people should pay attention, number one, to the animals that they are partial to. Mm-hmm. Think about why, and as they develop a closer relationship with that particular animal or type of animal, they can tune into what that animal represents in their life. And if it's a tabby, mm-hmm. you know, why are those tabbies coming in? You know, if you believe in reincarnation, there are many of us who believe that they come back again and again. Mm-hmm. So there are so many reasons why different animals or particular animals show up in your life.
Mm-hmm. And is it basically like what you're suggesting is that people intuit the love, you know, they tune into the love they feel for the animal, and then they kind of look within and try to kind of ask themselves certain questions about why, you know, this particular kind of animal is some type of animal that,
yes.
that I strongly relate to? Or are there general things, for example, that, you know, is there a body of wisdom about blue jays are representing this kind of energy, or, you know,
yes.
Pointers are representing this kind of energy? Could you go into both
yes.
sides of that?
Well, let me
I
give you
I know we're going way off track here.
No, no. I love it, because this is this segues into something I was hoping I could mention this morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I got up and I made my cup of tea, and I was looking out the window, as I do every morning, I noticed that there was a dove sitting right outside my window, which is not a usual occurrence. I know there are doves nearby where I live, but this particular dove was there for me. I just knew that. And I thought about it, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. Why is the dove here right now looking at me in this way? And I thought about it, and I realized that what the dove meant this morning had to do with our phone call.
Ah.
I thought about, yes, this is so interesting that you asked this question. When I was in South Africa 2 years ago, I was very, very lucky to have a week with Credo Mutwa, who is the great Zulu Sangoman, yes, who mm-hmm. the keeper of the wisdom of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in his home and in his teaching room. And there in the teaching room is a beautiful painting. And there's a view of a sky, and there's a gorgeous eagle in flight. And on the back of the eagle, hitching a ride, is a beautiful dove.
Hmm.
And what he taught me about that story, it's an ancient Zulu story, is that is the story of the dove coming with the wisdom of nature and heaven, bringing it down to earth, and the dove is riding on the back and on the wings of the powerful eagle, coming down to bring the message to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I was quickly reminded that my phone call today was a way to help people open to that particular wisdom, and that dove is the feminine energy coming to earth in a very, very powerful form, although it is a gentle form.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleness is, I believe, no stronger. There's no stronger power in the world than gentleness, and that is the dove, the feminine, coming to earth right now. So that's a long way around to tell you that every animal has a message, and that's what I got this morning to share with people.
Oh, lovely. That also resonates for me with the teachings of the I Ching, which talk about the power of gentleness, the different kind of approach that comes from the side of gentleness. It's the elder female daughter that comes in with gentleness and brings that
as
a gift, and it's also the power of the wind, which the birds is affiliated with that in the I Ching, and the birds fly with it. This is a much deeper level of conversation. I just want to comment and get your insights about than the usual thought, which is, often I look at our companion animals and think, oh my, they're doing so much yeoman's work, and everybody, so many people who are able to would love to and do have animals of various kinds.
Yes.
And it often feels like they're, we think we're taking care of them. Of course, we do provide food and care and whatever, but they're also taking care of us.
They've really got their
work cut out for them. I've often just had that insight. I'd love to hear you expanding on that notion a little bit about, because we tend to, we think, man, this is the uber species, they're lucky to be here as my little thing, whatever. But, something else is going on. Yeah.
Very much more, in particular dogs. Mm-hmm. I think dogs are the great teachers of unconditional love, as we tend to know. But attitudes are changing. Remember, it wasn't all that long ago that dogs were kept outside in the backyard, and in dog houses. They weren't in our homes. They were called Fido. That's changed. Dogs are now not only in our homes, they're in our bedrooms. They're sleeping with us, and we give them names as if they were children.
Mm-hmm.
So dogs, in particular, are just pure energy, teaching us about unconditional love. But they are not, they do not see themselves as, our slaves or working for us. They are teachers. They are with us because they want to be with us, not because we are forcing them. They have much wisdom to teach us, and sometimes they get confused. For example, they find it hard, and all animals find this difficult to understand about humans, that we tend to be upset with our physicalness. We get unhappy. We're too fat, or we're too thin, or we're too this, or we're too that. Animals are very comfortable with their physical vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
They scratch their ears a bit about, why are you not comfortable in your humanness? So many levels of teaching, and dogs teach love. There's no final teaching on love. Even animals are still learning. Dogs, the great bodhisattvas of teaching love, are strays. They are the animals that are left in shelters. Those are the great teachers of love, because they've suffered and they know more about it. So there's so much wisdom coming from all different species.
And that's also that also makes a lot of sense, because I have a number of friends who will, basically make a point of adopting a stray, rather than getting a newborn, and who counsel other people to do it. I mean, there are people who are very keyed into that exact point.
We have a huge homeless animal problem in this country, dogs and cats, particular cats. Mm-hmm. If we have time, I'd like to mention some of that.
Mm-hmm. Go for it. We're here on the topic. Yeah, we could talk about it.
Well, I think it's extremely important. Gandhi once said a society can be judged by the way it treats its animals.
Mm-hmm.
And although so many people are animal lovers, they love their dogs, they love their cats, they love wildlife, we're a bit blinded to what's really going on out there. And cats, for example, I actually just wrote an article about this, the pros and cons of owners letting their cats outside to roam. There are like 84 million owned cats in this country. And the problem is we also have millions and millions of feral and wild cats, homeless cats. And that's not the end of the problem. What's happening is that we're decimating our wild birds and our small mammals out in nature. So there's a lot of debate, you know, what do we do? What do we do? But there's a huge homeless population of dogs and cats. So things are getting better with dogs. I'm not quite as sure what's happening with cats, but, you know, we've got a lot to do.
And there are different organizations that that help these situations, and things that people can become aware of and do as well.
Yes, we all can help. You know, no one should ever feel helpless. You know, every decision we make matters. You know, number one, we can't afford anymore to let all our cats roam. We're wiping out the wildlife. You know, keep your cat indoors. Yes, rescue. If you see feral cats, if you see homeless cats, get them, you know, get them inside, rescue them, find homes, work with your veterinarian. So there's so many things we can all do, because we need to consider our family as not just the people in our home and the pets in our home, our companion animals, but it's all nature, all wildlife, all creatures out in the wild.
Can you speak a little bit about animal rescue? Because I actually have a very good friend who is very committed to doing that. And yet it's, you know, it's not something that everybody would think of. People might have concerns about it and, you know, how difficult or problematic in some way they may have, you know, kind of hygiene concerns or concerns about how to help, you know, a stray and possibly feral animals. Do you have any pointers or tips about any of that?
Well, there, again, I was just writing about this, but there is, you know, there are humane traps. If you have, say, in your backyard, a family of feral cats turn up, you know, you can, first of all, get some advice, preferably from your veterinarian, and you can have a humane trap. You can trap them. You can get them spayed and neutered, and take them to shelters. So there is one solution that mistakenly has become popular in rescuing feral cats, and it's called trap, TNR. It's called trap, spay or neuter, and then re-release. And that may sound good in theory, but it is really disastrous because, number one, the homeless population of dogs and cats isn't necessarily going down, particularly cats, because people keep dumping them. You know, unwanted animals continue to be dumped on the roadside or parks or wherever. And so that population isn't going down. If anything, it's going up. So the important thing is, do not re-release wild animals. That's not a good solution because, again, we're wiping out our birds and small mammals. So I definitely do not advocate that. But there are wonderful organizations, particularly with dogs. So many people are willing to help an animal on the roadside. And in my book, I have an entire chapter that lists everything that we can do, so many different things we can do to help, and help homeless animals is part of that. You know, don't turn a blind eye when you see an animal walking around lost or confused. You know, it, try and help. It may not always be successful, but, you know, we can all do something to help.
Yeah, that's very important, and your book and website are great resources for that. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what the animals are, you know, how we can, I think people feel on some level that we communicate with our animals, but then there's another level in which we kind of poo-poo that or don't exactly believe it, and, you know, it seems kind of a little out there, or we secretly feel it and maybe we don't want to talk about it. If, you know, can you talk a little bit about that?
All right. You know, we don't want to sound as if, you know, we need to, our best friends need to phone, you know, the lunatic asylum, you know, when we share stories that we believe are truth. We tend to be timid of sharing, but I have an entire chapter in my book about, you know, I'm a scientist, but I'm also a spiritual person, so they're very different sides of me, but I have an entire chapter about, it's called How We Know What Animals Are Thinking and Feeling, but it's the science. You know, we actually have science behind intuition and the fact that these things really are happening, and we tend to underestimate our intuitive abilities with animals. There are very few people I know who are owners of animals who have not had intuitive experiences or close communication with their animals. There are very few who, I can't even think of anyone right now who has said, no, I'm sorry, I've never had a connection like that with my animal. It's the reverse. But we tend to be shy of sharing that with others. But we know.
We know
they occur.
Can you give some examples of different, you know, kind of a range of communications from just knowing what the animal wants when they're meowing, for example, which, you know, you know, all the way to more kind of complex and sort of fascinating examples of our communicating with animals?
Yes, the best way for me to do that is to explain a little bit about myself. And when I was a small girl, I was very shy, very quiet, and I used to go out into nature, and so I can't even remember a time before I was connected to animals in that way. I would go outside, and it was as if they knew the birds, the deer. There was an orchard and a woods in my backyard where I grew up in New Jersey, and the animals and I bonded, and it was a natural thing. There was no conscious awareness on my part of what was happening, but I was somehow imprinted by the animals. They live, particularly wildlife, they live in a world that is more closely connected to source, what I call source, the spirit, the creative forces. They live in that world much more intimately. Well, they have to survive, but it is their world, and I feel I was imprinted somewhat into that. So I've carried it with me my whole life, but we all have the ability to connect with that. Most of us do. We tend to, as we said earlier, deny it, but, you know, life takes over and we shut down. It's like using a muscle. We use it for a while and then we don't, and it tends to get floppy. But once we get back into it, we can use it again. So over the years, my connection to animals has stayed strong, but it has deepened. But, for example, yes, I connect with animals, but I would never have a discussion with Fluffy about what you want for dinner. That's not a level of communication that I have ever, you know, been concerned about. I find that my connections with animals has always been a heart connection, deeper issues. For example, if I was in a shelter and I immediately, which I do, I'm an empath, so I immediately connect to what's going on with an animal. I pick up and feel what's going on in their hearts and their spirits. It's I can't turn it off. And so I will receive a message, not where they lived, you know, their diet, nothing like that. What I get is immediately a connection to their heart. What's upsetting them, their yearnings, why they've not had love in their, you know, these different deeper levels of communication. So that's been my experience. But it isn't necessarily about words. Remember, animals don't speak English. So when you communicate with an animal on whatever level, you are the one assigning the words. That's a, an important thing to remember. And so it's about listening, not getting your mind involved. It's about listening at a deeper level through your heart. And then you will get the messages and assign a word that is your word. But I find that animals are not necessarily wanting to talk about trivial issues. That has been my experience.
What about when the animals themselves speak? You know, I've noted that the animals that I have are, you know, become progressively more and more making sounds, making, you know, a whole range of the variety of the sounds, the length of the sort of sentences from, you know, just a simple meow to, like, longer sounding, you know, phrases and stuff like that. Now, I've often felt, well, they may be, you know, just mimicking the verbal household here, you know, in order to participate.
That's part of it, yes. But they also, you're in very close communication with them. Now, remember that an animal communicates, and I give specific examples in my quote, what I call the science chapter. You know, studies have been done as to why animals, what motivates animals to sit at a door and wait for their owner to come home. Some do, some don't. There, you are a magnet. You are like an energetic magnet when you have a close emotional bond to your animal. So you love your dog very much. That animal knows that, and that animal is going to do everything to connect with you, be it sounds, be it body language. You know, an animal will use the same things we use to communicate. You know, it isn't only talking, it's body language. It's they'll use all their senses to communicate with you. So you have that personal connection. So that's yes, that's happening. And you know what it means. Correct?
Well, sometimes, no, you know, I guess I have a sense sometimes when something starts coming in as to what is of interest. I mean, recently, the cat got very interested in a horn, you know, like a beep-beep kind of horn. And when the horn was put away, he made particular sounds, and I understood that to be that he wanted the horn taken out, and he wanted access to the horn, he wanted to play with the horn, and then he would be content, which is in fact what happened. I don't know why he's interested in the horn, except that it's kind of novel, it has an interesting shape, it made a sound.
Right.
You know, for some reason he took an interest in the horn.
Right.
But I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why he did. I just know that he did. Yeah.
Well, that's the point. And animals will, if you have a close relationship with your companion animal, that animal knows how to get your attention, knows how to communicate with you, knows when you'll listen, knows when you won't. A quick funny story. I know people sometimes say, well, you know, I can't get my this animal or that animal to communicate me. And I said, well, you know, animals are not always sitting around waiting to communicate with you. They have their own lives, busy lives too, and they have interests. So sometimes maybe if you're interested in communicating, maybe they're not. And I learned this in my own situation. I have a deaf cat. And my deaf cat sneaked out one day, and he was out for 10 minutes, and I panicked, and I ran around, it's a group of townhouses, and I ran outside, and I thought, well, oh my God, I'm the great communicator here, you know, where are you, where are you? And I tried to tune into my cat. Well, let me tell you, absolutely nothing came, nothing, and I became more and more frustrated, thinking this is ridiculous. Then I just stopped for a moment, realized that the cat was not letting me know where he was, but suddenly I heard a noise in the tree, and it was a bird. I suddenly picked up on some type of awareness from a bird in the tree. The bird, and again, I have trouble with words. mm-hmm. you know, because there were no words assigned to this communication. Mm-hmm. But I followed a direction that the bird sent me in, and there, happily, chewing on grass and jumping in a garden with my cat. And I suddenly realized that that cat had no intention of getting in touch with me at all. He was very mm-hmm. busy doing his mm-hmm. own thing. Mm-hmm. So animals have their own ideas, their own moods, their own times when they will communicate and when they won't. It's one of my favorite stories about animal communication. Mm-hmm. So it isn't only that they're waiting constantly for us, and we need to listen more and pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense. We're going to have to take a little station identification break here at the half-hour point. So when we'll be continuing this discussion with Linda Bender, the author of Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. She is a veterinarian and also an empath, very tuned into animals, and has a lot of wisdom and understanding about them. So stay with us. After the break, we'll be back with Linda for the second half of the show. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. Today we're talking about animal wisdom with the author of a new book, Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals, by Linda Bender, DVM. She's a doctor of veterinary medicine. Just want to say, if you're just tuning into the show now, you'll be able to hear the first half of the program a little later today and from thence forward in the Connect the Dots archive. If you've enjoyed the program, please remember to like us on iTunes, pass it along to your friends. For my reporting on health, food, and the environment, you can follow me on Huffington Post. Go to my website, healthjournalistblog.com, and also look for my blogs on Alternet. If you are enjoying this wonderful conversation I want to with Linda Bender from the first half of the show, you can get more information at her website, Linda Bender, that's B-E-N-D-E-R, .org. And, of course, you can find her book, which is a North Atlantic Books publication, on her website as well as Amazon and elsewhere. Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals. And we'll be going back to that conversation now. So, Linda, one of the things that you touch on quite extensively in the book, which I think is quite important for people, is the sense of grief and loss that people experience as when their animal becomes ill or passes, as well as sort of guidance both about understanding those transitions and what they mean for us, as well as how to best care for our animals, our friends, as they age and experience ill health.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's something that we do in this country. We deny death. You know, we tend to ignore it. We tend to run from it. We tend to push it away. We do everything we can not to face it. But death is very much a part of life. And animals know this. They are much more comfortable with the passages of life, the transitions of life, than humans are. And it is a tremendous teaching that they can offer us. But on the other side of it, I am so saddened when people tell me that when their animal is toward the end of their lives, they cannot face being with them. If they have to go to the vet and the animal has to be euthanized, that they don't stay with the animal. This is so important to do this. And there are people who, if you cannot be with your animal at the end of his or her life, who will do that for you. So it's a two-way street. But animals do have much to teach us about the process of death and transition.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that, please. On the one hand, you're saying, if an animal has to be euthanized, it's like take it to the vet. Some people may feel they don't want to see it. What about an animal being removed from medical care and, you know, to be at home for their passing. We
absolutely
do that with
is,
people,
yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is, that's, this is where we can utilize a closer emotional bond with our animal. People have said to me more times than I can think of, how do I know? How do I know if I have to help my animal at the end of his or her life? How do I know? I said, pay attention. You know, pay attention. The animal will give you cues. Obviously, if your animal is sick, you do what you can to keep the animal alive.
Right.
But if there comes a time and you know it's the end, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You listen to your veterinarian, of course, and you have options. I say keep your animal with you at home, have a quiet, peaceful ending of a life. It's no different than a human,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want your animal to suffer either.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do when there is no other choice,
mm-hmm.
And euthanasia is a possibility. That's when you do it, and you don't do it before.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you know, in my particular, one particular case of mine, my dog was with me for 15 years, and he had chronic illnesses. And, of course, I gave all sorts of heroics from time to time to keep my dog alive. But that was because he still had a great quality of life. But toward the end, he developed some issues, and I knew. And he said to me in non-verbally, this body is worn out. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed home for 3 days, and I slept with him. I stayed with him. We, you know, reminisced about stories. I took him for a final ride in the car where he used to love to sit.
Mm-hmm.
I took him outside when he couldn't walk anymore so he could view his favorite place in the yard. This is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And he quietly passed in my arms, and mm-hmm. it was a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That animal deserved and needed that time, that special time with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sacred bond that you maintain to the very end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very touching. And you know, one of the things that people have shared with me when one of my beloved animals passed is people experiencing grief and loss, and you know, a lot of people stepped up to share that they had been through those kinds of experiences, and many of them really report that their love and connection to that animal and the sense of grieving the animal or missing the animal is something that can go on for quite some time. It's not just, you know, you don't just turn the page the next week.
Oh, no.
Or, you know, can you speak about
no.
that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, again, I compare this to a human. You know,
mm-hmm.
the grief when we lose an animal is not to be reduced.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a small animal practitioner for in the past, and I remember so many people would come in and they would apologize for crying or grieving over an animal that was dying or died, or and they would say, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and I would say, "No, no, no! Do not ever apologize for grieving or feeling strong emotions about the illness or the passing of your animal. This is a wonderful thing. The world would be such a better place if everyone did this." You know, so.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's changing, but we still have, you know, a way to go. I mean, these are precious, sacred beings that we have relationship with. Why would we not suffer grief? The other thing I tell people to do is keep photos of your animal. You know, I have an area where I have photos of all the different animals who've been in my life. I keep their collars. I have journals that I've written after a passing of an animal. You know, there are lots of things we can do to keep them in our lives in a special place. So I don't see that this is different than a loving bond with any other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that, you know, sometimes people, you know, have trouble even mourning for humans, you know.
Yes.
I mean, some people do and some don't. But, you know, so, and the reason that I mention, I mean, but I've observed this, the reason I mention it is for you to talk a little bit more, if you can, sharing, you know, you said the world would be a better place if more people were able to feel that grief and that loss and really be attuned to it.
Yes.
You know, so can you tell us a little bit more about your philosophy, why you feel the world would be a better place if people were more
Certainly.
Tuned into that?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Well, one of the reasons I wrote my book mm-hmm. is because I had a personal experience with animals in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that wildlife in particular can no longer live in blissful ignorance of humanity. So they're interested in what's going on, because what you have to realize, what we do to animals, we're actually doing to ourselves. And so what I was called to do is to make people aware of the deeper connection we have, not only with animals, but to each other. And the essence of my book, the essence of my work and my teaching is about love. And, you know, we ask for guidance, we pray to beings who are not in this life with us, angels, you know, whatever. But we have these beings that are incarnate with us who are so willing to teach us about love. And that truly is, I believe, what will save us on this planet with all the problems we have, with what we're doing. And we need to understand more deeply the connection of humans, the interconnectedness of all life. And it's truly about love. The essence of my book is the teachings animals have given me over my life, and it's truly all about love. And unless we open to that dimension, you know, I fear that we're lost.
Yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, personally, I had the experience with my cat who passed this last year, that, and we were together for 15 years, that actually there was healing work
yes.
that I experienced. I don't know, I presume since it was a very loving relationship, it was obviously very good for everybody. I don't know if,
yes.
if that animal needed healing as I did as
well,
a human.
Absolutely.
But you know, it was a very loving, healing relationship, and it actually, you know, to me it was analogous to other spiritual practices or other forms of therapy, or, you know, in terms of what was attained. And it wasn't that I consciously set out with any kind of goal of that type at all.
No,
you know,
you don't need to.
I was called to take these animals, and you know, and
yes.
this was the result in looking back on 15 years of time
yes.
spent with these, you know, these incredible beings. But it really did have a deeply therapeutic quality that, you know,
yes.
that certainly changed me. I don't know what, if anything, changed, because to my perception of these animals, well, especially of her, because actually her brother needed more help, apparently, due to experiences that he came in with, and they were, you know,
yes.
litter mates and all. And there was also a sense of, I mean, it was quite interesting, because I've heard of this kind of thing before where, you know, there were two siblings, and one is kind of embodying the ease and perfection, and the other
yes.
one is manifesting more troubles and wounds and difficulties.
Uh-huh.
And so, and this is true, this pair of litter mates and everything. And actually, the progress and all the changes were more apparent through him, because he was the one who came in with more of the apparent difficulties. I never knew if he'd been harmed, you know, when a small kitten,
yes,
or what the reason was. But
yes,
everything about his presentation, neurology, trust level, and everything else,
yes,
shifted,
yeah,
over time. But my perception of her was that she was just perfect to begin with, and was always perfect.
Well, you know, think, yeah, about cats, because you mentioned, mm-hmm, cats earlier. But, mm-hmm, one of the main qualities about a cat, a feline, is healing. Remember, witches always had pet cats, remember?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, independence, cleverness, mystical, mystery, these are all qualities of the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Magic. So you tuned into that, and what a wonderful teaching. But healing is tremendously associated with cats. As a matter of fact, studies have shown, I think I mentioned this in my book, that the purr of a cat is elicits the greatest response in the human immune system. So if you have a cat, your little pet, Fluffy, you know, and you're not feeling well, and Fluffy's on your chest purring, that is the best way to immediately boost your immune system. Now, can we explain why? No. But we don't need to explain why, but we know it occurs. We know it occurs. You know, in science, we cannot even explain the mechanics of a cat's purr. Did you know that?
Wow.
So there's much mystery involved, but it happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's thank you. I mean, that really certainly conforms to, you know, to my experience, and I think your book is really important in validating this for people. Once again, it's Animal Wisdom, Learning from the Spiritual Lives of Animals by Linda Bender. You know, but this brings me to another question, which I think, you know, I'd love to hear you delve into, which is, how do we give back to them? How do we give back to the animal kingdom? What can we do for them? What can humans do for animals, and, you know, to help them, if they're in distress, or, you know, if populations are threatened or animals are in different conditions, what can we do?
Oh, I mean, that could be an entire book, but I give in, as I said earlier, I have a particular chapter toward the end of my book about things that we can all do. And everybody can do something. Every choice we make every day affects the lives of others. And there are things we can do for companion animals. There are things we can do for wildlife. There are so many, so many things, and I believe that, you know, we come into this life with our own gifts and treasures that we are, I believe, meant to share with the world. And so when we tune into those particular areas, our own gifts, and we want to share in the world, that's the direction we go in. You know, what breaks your heart? You know, for me, it's always been animals. I know that's my sacred teaching, helping animals. But what is your sacred teaching if you're interested in cats, if you're interested in geese or in birds? There's so many ways that we can help animals. And basically every day, everything we do in some way affects that, whether it's helping the stray on the side of the road. It's, you know, driving slowly when you go down the road in your car. It's, you know, recycling. It's as simple as that. There are a million ways that we can help.
Mm-hmm. So your book discusses some of those kinds of strategies, but
absolutely,
part of it is keeping them in mind, so that, you know, what I'm hearing also is, it's like both, it's important for people to know the strategies, and they can get both those strategies as well as the validation of what so many of us are experiencing in your book, Animal Wisdom. But it's also, I feel, important not to compartmentalize so that, you know, like people you know, go to church on Sunday and then, you know, they behave viciously toward people in business or something. You know, it's like what you're suggesting means we should be tuning in all the time in some way.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit
It's an entire consciousness, and I have another entire chapter to help people specifically do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't only connecting with animals, it's connecting to other humans, but it's connecting to who we are. Connecting to ourselves. You know, we walk around and we tend to be disconnected from everything that is below the neck.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need to do is reconnect to our own hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Because we will only care for and look after and love and help what we know.
Mm-hmm.
So I give specific techniques in the book of how people can, number one, get in touch with their own hearts. And it's a process. You know, you have to start inside with yourself. And then from there, it works outward. Rumi once said, you know, polish your heart, and then you will see the face of God in all life.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to begin by polishing our own hearts and then work outward. You're right. It isn't about going to church on Sunday and then going to the job and viciously attacking your coworker. You know, you got to start first inside yourself and work outward.
Mm-hmm. You know, that brings me to another question, and this is a rather esoteric one for the end of the program, but maybe we can do it fairly rapidly, which is the following. I report personally on a lot of the ills of the world, health, food, environment, the damage we're doing to the ecological balance of Earth, the specific activities like fracking and other things. And, you know, this places me into really looking into, you know, the horrors of what mankind's unconsciousness can do the way it affects all beings. So I'm looking at that quite, you know, really all the time, a lot.
Yes.
And specifically in reference to health. And so one of the things that has been very important is I have to get on that horse and kind of ride that and be a warrior and model that for others. But I also have to take care of my own heart and my own sense of hopefulness, living with worry and but with also with hope, you know. And so I personally felt that the animals in my life have really supported my work. Actually,
absolutely.
My ability to do it. But I'm also concerned that it's hurtful to them, you know, to be sort of part of the project of carrying some of this.
They're better at holding that space than we are, actually.
Oh, really? Okay, that's reassuring, because I've always felt badly, like they got drafted onto a team and, you know.
No. They're there to help you, and that's their job, and they're much better at filtering. They're much better at filtering. Remember, they don't take themselves as personally as we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, humans, every species has a species-specific genius, you know. Mm-hmm. I talk about this in my book, too.
Mm-hmm.
And as humans, what we do, one of our great species-specific geniuses, that we have the ability to look and see a problem and see and yearn for a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of our problems right now are overwhelming, but we do have that ability to not only see the problem, but to figure it out and to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I am hopeful that we can solve a lot of the problems we have today. And I know you've mentioned several of them. And for me, as a veterinarian, I know so much about what goes on in the food animal industry.
Mm.
And it breaks my heart what's happening there. That may be a topic for a different discussion, but that is a huge area of concern to me. And I hope to do more work in that specific area as well.
Well, bravo. We're coming to the end of our show as we can hear the music creeping up here. But I want to thank you so much, Linda Bender, the author of Animal Wisdom, who's been with us today on Connect the Dots. Please, everyone, check out her book. We will definitely have you back to talk more, Linda, about these wonderful scenes. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, thank you. And And thank you to listeners and to all the animals for all that you do for us. Please join us again next week on Connect the Dots. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio, and I'm Allison Rose Levy. Have a wonderful week.